Well, hello everybody. Hopefully you are doing well. This will be the second installment of the Fatherhood series that I'm doing currently. Today I invited my friend Trey 50 Daniel on the show to talk about his experience as a father. He has two younger boys, which could be a little bit different from my experience, obviously, but he's been with his wife for, I believe, well over a decade. And like I said, they have two little boys together, and he seems to be doing a very, very good job of raising them. And he also inhabits more of like the gaming space and has more right-leaning political beliefs. He's probably a little bit more further right than me, if you will. So, you know, is almost meaningless as those terms are anymore. So we have a lot of back and forths on Twitter. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we disagree. You'll probably see a little bit in the podcast where him and I come from different angles, but we agree, I think, on the core stuff very, very much so. So hopefully today you guys enjoy this conversation. If you are a member of the channel, then you get to see this video completely uncensored without this introduction or anything for the lowly price of $2.99 a month. So please keep that in the back of your mind. But I guess without further ado, here's my conversation with my friend Trey 50 Daniel on fatherhood.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
All right, everybody, welcome back to In Liberty and Health. And I feel like this one was a very, very long time coming. My guest today and myself have been mutuals on Twitter for quite a while, and I always enjoy our exchanges. Even if we don't agree on something, I feel like we have very, very productive dialogue. And he also looks into a lot of stuff when it comes to like gaming and culture that I just really, really enjoy. And I always like kind of getting the insights from. So today I have with me my friend Trey 50 Daniel. How you doing, man?
Doing good.
Nice, man. Well, I'm really, really glad you could do this.
As you can tell, I got a little bit of sun today, so
Yeah. I'm trying to keep mine in Pennsylvania, you know, kind of like comes and goes. So I know whenever let's say probably October rolls around, like my tan's gonna be gone, and I kind of like being a little bit tan. So as gay as that sounds.
You know, I just get red for a few days and then it goes away. So there's not really any benefit for me, but you know, you get to see the red phase before I go back to pasty, you know?
Man, you know, it's kind of funny because you live in the South too, and you know, obviously we don't have to go to like exactly where, but you know, I always like have this idea about people who live in southern states. I'm like, you should be tan all year round, like you would never burn, like it that sounds awesome.
See, you either stay like stay indoors mostly during the hot periods of the year, which I tend to do most of the time, but you know, obviously yard work and everything, but either that, and you know, you stay inside and you stay pasty white like I am usually, but or you stay outside like all the time, and like you end up like my dad, who kind of he basically just he almost looks Indian in the way that not you know, feather, not dot. So
That's pretty good. I remember I was always tan as a kid too, and people are gonna lose their mind about this, but I remember asking my mom, am I part black, because I'm like always tan, and my mom was like, don't you ever say that around your grandfather. But, yeah, so
it's funny because I actually am part Indian. You know, there's some Indian in my lineage, definitely. So it's funny that I get the none of that gene at all. Like, well, I guess I will say one thing that I got out of that gene. I probably did get the you know, running sort of the long distance running gene from that, because I can typically kind of go forever barring just passing out,
I got the
run forest kind of gene out of that, but you know, other than that, I didn't really pick up the definitely not the tan ability or complexion.
Yeah, you know, I think that's probably the better of all those things to get. And I recall, I think you said you had like a 400-pound squat, which, you know, if you could do distance running and squat pretty heavy, you're doing pretty damn good. So, like, I did a 400-pound squat this week because I hadn't did it in a while. And the gym that I go to, I'm friends with the owners, and they put up a board, and it's like everybody's record board. And of course, there's people just like mog all my records. I'm like, all right, man, whatever. But they have like a number, so it's like, all right, 545.
It's like, oh god.
Yeah, there literally was someone with like a 600-pound deadlift. I'm like, motherfucker, because mine's 545. I'm like, that's pretty good for being 5'11", being able to pull 545 off the ground. I'm pretty happy with that. 315 bench and a 405 squat. I'm like, for just kind of an average dude, I think I'm doing pretty fucking good. But then, you know, of course, there's always like somebody had like a 415 bench. I'm like, all right, well, I'll never get that. Like, that's just
you gotta make peace with that. You gotta make peace with it. You know, just like let it. You know, I'm never gonna be the most jacked guy or whatever. Mm. But you know, if I can, you know, mog some of these other guys like with my calves, you know, that's gonna be my claim to fame, is like, you know, do you have calves like this dude, like, yeah, just show them, like, you know, they dude, absolutely mog them.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because my mom is 5'4", and like she has these highly, or at least she used to before she lost a lot of weight, but like she used to have these very defined calves. And I think I have a picture somewhere, because we have like matching tattoos on our legs. So I know people are going to rip on me. I sound like such a bitch in this podcast already, but like my cat.
Don't worry. We're going to cover all, we're going to make you sound like the biggest wuss on the planet. Like before.
But yeah, my mom's calves are super defined, and I inherited that. So I'm sitting here thinking like, okay, so like my daughter hopefully is going to inherit like my glutes and calves, because that means like she's gonna have like the nicest lower section in the world. I know this sounds like really weird, but like I have good genetics for that stuff. Like
we don't need to get in Donald Trump territory here. Right. My beautiful daughter.
Yes. Like,
most beautiful hips that I've ever seen.
Like, yeah. It's like, okay, she wasn't my daughter. But I kind of hold like my calves pretty dear. I'm like, you know what, man? Like, I see a lot of these guys, and they may look way better than me, like from the waist up. But man, I'll tell you what, from the waist down, I got these motherfuckers beat. My calves are defined as fuck. And like, it is kind of this kind of like almost goes to a political theme overall, though, is that like you eventually kind of accept your lot and your area in like a hierarchy in this respect, where like, you know, I understand my genetics are never going to be that I'm going to have like the giant Death Star delts. If I get really lean, my shoulders look good, but they're never going to look like Ronnie Coleman shoulders. Or like, you know, I once again, to go back to some other people, like some people
you're never going to have the Rock. You know, you're not going to.
Right. It's just not in my genetic deck, which sucks, but eventually you kind of come to peace with it. And it's like, all right, well, then you work with what you got. So like for me right now, I'm doing like a chest focused block where I work out chest 3 times a week, and it's gotten me some good gains. So like before I couldn't get 315, but then over like the last couple months, I finally started hitting 315 consistently. So it's like, okay, well, for me to make gains in my chest, I have to do 20 sets of chest a week, work, you know, hitting it 3 times a week, and, you know, doing bench twice, and then a pretty good like incline bench and like flies and stuff like that for you know, another day. So for me to get to 315, it was very, very difficult. For other people, you know, hey, maybe their chest genetics are good, that, you know, 415, like I was saying earlier, is nothing for some people. But, you know, I think for guys that are more of our leaning, you know, which I would definitely say is more like conservative or right leaning, eventually it's pretty easy to come to peace with like, it's just not in the cards for me. Like, that's just the way I am.
Yeah, you know, you and I guess this can kind of direct into the territory I guess you probably want to go eventually anyway, but there's definitely something with to be said about like you understand like your role, like you know, you play your game. Like if you start, and this is kind of something sports related, I don't don't think you said you played any sports. Something definitely sports related was always like, especially in something like basketball or something like that, where you have to, or running, running was something that I definitely learned. This is running. I had to run my race. I couldn't run. If I run other people's race and I do their pace, I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to actually just murder my body and not perform to my best. And that's where, like, you know, when I hit my, you know, PR times is always whenever I didn't worry about trying to keep up with the leaders, didn't worry about trying to like pace a certain number of pace, you know, like if, you know, some of these guys would like try to science it, you know, and stuff like that of like, I need to hit this specific time or something like that. And if you do that, and if you don't run the race based on how your body is feeling and what you know, can do, then you're not going to be able to, you know, produce the most output for that time. You know, if I'm running a 5K, I only have 3.1 miles to get, you know, get this whole distance. And if in mile one, I just completely blow my load there, and I'm done that whole last half. And, you know, especially the last half mile is probably the most important, because that's where you can kind of make up the most time, because now you're just sprinting to the end and I'm going to leave it all in line. But if you've already gassed yourself, like there's no way to come back from that. And that's something, you know, run your race. Like I had to learn that, you know. I was mostly reading I forget where I read that, you know, it's some sort of running book that I just kind of picked up on, and I was, you know, reading at the time, because I was really trying to study it a little bit more than I have since, you know. But yeah, it was, you know, run your race. If you run other people's race, you're just gonna, and you know, just like we're a lot in life, like, you know, if you've got to play your game. If you play somebody else's game, you're already losing.
Yeah. So I actually kind of wanted to go into this territory as well, because as I said a little bit in the introduction, I know you always kind of look into the gaming stuff. And I remember when, what was that? Sweet Baby was the gaming thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember. Yeah. You had a whole ton about this, and I haven't talked about it like on the podcast. I talked on like Post Zero and Rule Zero shows, I think, a little bit. It's so funny to me to look at the gaming industry over the last couple years, because I feel like gaming probably peaked around like 2000, maybe peaked isn't the right word, but like it started to get a lot worse after about like 2010, 2012, right? Like that's when you had like
basically 2012, and then
You had like Dead Space 2, you had Mass Effect, like all these big series that like we all remember, you know, drinking tons of Mountain Dew and playing and just absolutely loving every single second of it. Now I feel like that's just not quite the case anymore, and it seems like it's, you know, largely because like they're trying to make games to appeal to an audience that isn't buying their games. Like the people who play games the most,
they're running a race that isn't theirs, but by trying to appeal to people that don't care about them and don't like them, you know. And that's where you always go wrong, is, you know, you want to hone in. Like, yes, you can try to pull in a few more people, right? But and that's kind of something with my, I guess, social media usage is always kind of like I'm wanting to pull in a few more people, but if I'm not pulling in the right kind of people that want to follow me, that want to care about what I have to say, if I'm not pulling in the right kind of people, does it matter if the masses listen to me? If what they want to, you know, if I'm having to say what they want to hear, and not what I want to say, you know, that's where a lot of people pigeonhole themselves, is that they end up doing this kind of stuff. It's just going after whatever is the way to try to appeal, mass appeal, instead of, you know, running their race. Like I said, sticking to your lane in your game.
Yeah, I agree that there definitely is something to, and I like that saying a lot, because I've never heard anybody necessarily say that, is that like you should run your race, where it's like you understand where your position is in a lot of stuff. Like I realize, and I'm trying to constantly like assess how I'm doing in this whole social media game, right? Because I want to know, like, okay, well, if this isn't landing, then why? And am I the problem? Because this is something that I constantly come back to. Because like I look at the growth for my channels, and I'm like,
sometimes maybe, yeah.
But it's always like,
I'll say it.
Yeah, and you know, to be serious though, it's like, okay, yeah, sometimes I am the problem here, because like you kind of have to look at the way that other people are growing in your same niche and realize like, okay, if is there a reason I'm not appealing to somebody? And the chances are is that like you mightn't be the issue here. And this is, like I said, it's always something that I try to reflect on a lot. And even as we start to kind of like veer into the parenthood conversation, this is another thing that I kind of like am always having conversations in my own mind about, is like, okay, so when my daughter gets here, I have to understand that, and I said this with my buddy Paul, who's going to be another part of this whole series that I'm doing. Like, my daughter is going to be her own person. I can have all these wants, desires, wishes of who she's going to be, how she's going to be, but she's still going to be her own independent person that's going to just be herself no matter what. And even if I think I did absolutely everything right under the sun, she could still absolutely hate my guts for reasons that I'll just never understand or never comprehend in any reasonable way. And I don't know, like, I haven't really heard people talk about this a lot as a parent, is like managing expectations is kind of like the dark side of parenting. And not that, like, I think that anyone's going
to
say, like,
well, there's other dark sides to parenting.
Yeah. But
you can have people, yeah, you know, people who, you know, kind of, you know, give up or do the you know worst things imaginable to,
yeah,
you know, actually hurting their children or something like that. But
sure.
I guess the unpleasant side is more what you're like, yeah, like the unpleasant, like non-pleasant side of being a parent. A lot of people want to glamorize it, and I understand. Mm. It, you know, there's a lot of like really cool things. My son being into some of the stuff that I like, it, you know, that's pretty cool. You know, we get to do some things together. And then there's times where like, for instance, I really loved baseball growing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tried to get him into baseball. He's not such a fan of baseball. He's not that into it. And it could be a thing of time, and it could be a thing of experience. I know, because he seems to have sort of that trait of, if he's not, you know, exceptionally well, which I think he's pretty good already, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But if he's not, you know, just destroying the competition, he's not really happy with it. And I can sympathize with that, because I kind of felt that a lot of times. If I wasn't the best player or the best, you know, like when I was the best runner on our team, like that was okay. I am the pinnacle of our school's team.
Yeah.
But there were obviously, you know, there were people that were better than me, and they showed me that every time I would go out there and race against them. But like I said, I still had to keep running my own race. If I'm trying to run everybody else's race, it just doesn't do me any good. And I guess I'm keep on falling back on that, because that is something that's part of having to come to understanding with this, is that, yeah, that, you know, like you said, you know, you are gonna. To me, I've kind of accepted that I'm going to be a failure as a parent in the failure, you know, quotation. That in a way that my parents probably didn't, you know, because I've brought up with, you know, I guess minor tangent, but yeah, you know, my parents, I feel like could have done better. You know, I think everybody feels that, but I especially kind of feel that, because they were not the most, they were involved, but not, I guess present, like involved but not present.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, like, I find myself, you know, like, okay, I'm gonna do better in that aspect, but I know that I'm going to be a failure in whatever other aspects. I'll tell my wife, I've already failed him before, you know. Mm-hmm. in some aspect I've failed him. Right. I haven't done everything perfect, and nobody is going to, of course, but a lot of people do have sort of this idealized idea of like, okay, if I just do that, and it's funny, especially whenever we start having conversations about how parenting styles and stuff like that, and people are just like, yeah, you know, especially peaceful parenting or something like that. Like, oh yeah, you know, you just be peaceful. You ask them nicely, please do the white thing. Pretty please, yeah. put your thing up. But you know, if you do that 6 times, I mean, I don't know about you, I get really annoyed having to tell somebody like 6 or 7 times to do something.
Right.
And they don't do it. Yeah. And that's where like, okay, I get a little hot headed. You know, I tell them like, okay, go now, do it right now, or I'm gonna, you know, or everything's going away. Like, you know, I'm keeping your Nintendo. Like, you're not gonna have that thing back if you don't go do it. And you know, I gotta be hateful, and that's, but that's like, you know, like I said, I've already accepted, like, I'm going to be a failure in some aspects, but like, I feel like a lot of the other generation didn't think about that. And I think it's good that you're thinking about that, because you're like, hey, I can do everything the best that I can do. And that's all that it's going to be. Like, it, you know, whatever they become is their destiny. Like, that's their, he's going to write his own story. Like, my sons, they're going to write each of them are unique in their own way. They're going to write their own story. It's not my place to write their story, but I definitely am going to have a part in it. I'm definitely going to be contributing to that story, and I can contribute to that story very positively, or I can contribute it negatively. And they're still going to, like you said, they're still going to have some grievances with me, but it's not going to be like, I have to do my best to kind of head that off at the pass, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing that, kind of came to mind when you were talking about that, I consider myself like an agnostic theist, where like, if you push me one way or the other, I'd probably say I believe in God, but I don't claim certainty in that. But I remember when I talked to Rachel Wilson about kind of the way that they view sin and repenting in their religion, and you know, forgive me if I don't get this 100% right, but it's that basically like the culmination of your life, if you live your life in a way that's absent of sin, which I don't know exactly what the right phrasing would be for this, then when you die, you're going to feel the warm embrace of God. Whereas like, if you live your life in, you know, overwhelming sin, then you're going to feel a more cold, dark presence when you pass away. What I'm kind of picking up from what you're saying there is basically like, you want your son's overwhelming experience with you to be more positive than negative, where like, you understand that you're going to fail in some respects, but you just don't want that to code your entire, like, your son's perception and relationship with him. And like, I kind of think about, you know, my future, my daughter to be here in that same respect, where it's like, I understand to the best of my ability where my parents didn't do the best, but I also understand that like, I think they were trying, but there were just, you know, sometimes you're just not capable at that moment. And, you know, there's always the excuse, oh, you're busy, you had this, you had that. And it's just a little bit more conscious effort on your part that it would take to really set things right. And sometimes people just don't have that bandwidth at the time. So speaking of Rachel,
you know, it's adult, you know, adults have a lot more responsibilities than the child is going to have. I mean, you're juggling, even myself, it's just like I need to work a job. I need to, keep the upkeep of the home, you know, somewhat, you know, I need to take care of, you know, the yard work or whatever, like I was doing today. Mm-hmm. And, or, you know, maybe, you know, there's all kind of things, you know, laundry list of things that you need to take care of, in your own, you know, sphere. So yeah, whenever then you also tack on, oh, by the way, you also need to, be a teacher, in my case, maybe, you know, sort of a preacher, probably a poor one, you know, because I haven't done a good job at that. That, you know, that's one thing I probably haven't done a good job at. And, you know, other, you know, you've got to be everything to them. And being everything to them, and then also doing the things that a, you know, normal adult does, that is a lot of load. And that's, I understand why a lot of people will say, you know, hey, you know, the burden, you know, this kind of stuff, you know, even women, I understand, like, you know, saying, hey, you know, we go through this, we, you know, we do the, you know, we cook, we clean or something like mm-hmm. that. All, you know, they probably don't want to admit to that as much anymore. Yeah, thanks to feminism, but, yeah. you know, whatever. But as far as, you know, just, yeah, there's a lot that goes on. You have to be able to manage all of it. And I don't think anybody's going to be able to, especially in our kind of modern day where everything kind of, you know, meshes together. You know, you have a dad who's, you know, trying to, you know, work, and he's got to work overtime, and then he's got to come home and he's got to, you know, help with, you know, the dishes or something like that. And, you know, and then he needs to read to his kid the bedtime stories. Yeah, that gets to be a lot, you know, whenever all of that is required.
Yeah, it's like I said, in my mind, it seems like there's just a lot more conscious effort taken. And I think a lot of people, you know, I know everybody says like, oh, this percentage of people don't have like an inner monologue. It's not that, or inner dialogue, whatever it is, but it's kind of like, yeah, I mean, I believe it too, but I think it's also because like people just get so busy with their life. And like there definitely are some people out there who probably just legitimately do not have the mental capability to do it. But I believe for like, I would say more people that would be inclined like our angle, like the Heritage Americans, if you will, right? Where I do believe, you know, the people like us should be the ones that kind of like run the country. And I think that we're the most capable group of people. So, you know, you're more European whites, essentially. Like, I think people who do a bad job parenting, it's just because like, you know, one little thing goes wrong, right? And then it's like, okay, well, now I have to tend to this. And then you're 50 things down the line right now, and just each thing got you a little bit more off track, and you have a kid, and it's like, oh, well, not right now. Like, I can't deal with my kid right now, when like, in our minds, in like detached from that whole situation, it's like, no, obviously your kid's like probably one of the more important things, and like whatever literally else you have going on, yeah, you should probably attend to your kid before that, like regardless of what else is going on. But I just think it's like, once again, people are busy, and in the moment, it's like, I don't know, like I was talking to my buddy,
and Paul. There's ways to manage it, but sure. Like, and there's, you know, it comes in stages. I feel like mm-hmm. there's different stages. You know, I can't tell, you know, you can't tell an infant to like go read on their own. And right. You know, like I can tell my son, like literally just before I came on here, it was like, you know, hey, read a book, and then mama's going to tuck you in.
All right, we're going to take a second a day to chill and tell you about the show's sponsors, Tiger Fitness. Make sure you go to the link below to get all the supplements that I use day in, day out, and beyond. As I always say, you do not need supplements to become all jacked and tan or to progress in your health journey, but they could definitely be a useful tool in that respect. So as you can see on tigerfitness.com, we got MTS Nutrition, Blackstone Labs, Ambrosia, HPN, Nutrix Research, America Labs, Alani Nu, Pump Chasers, there's Redcon One, Accent Sledge, plenty of different companies that pretty much have absolutely any supplement you could possibly think of. Pre-workouts, fat burners, BCAAs, electrolyte mixes, you name it, it's on there. So go to Tiger Fitness through the link below. Use code Kyle at checkout to let them know that I sent you. Get your protein powder, you name it, anything that's going to help you stick to your diet and hopefully achieve your health goals. All right, thanks. Back to the show.
That's kind of the routine there. Like, hey, you read your book, then you're going to go to bed. You know, that's your what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. But you know, if it was like, if I'm sitting there looking at it like a nonverbal infant, and I say like, just read your book. That's unreasonable expectation. But you know, you have to plan for that stage and kind of be in that. And yeah, like you said, it's definitely going to be, that is the priority. And you know, I would say that in some ways, I think I've done better in that regard, as far as like I've definitely prioritized like them over. I probably could have pursued a very lucrative like career, but I just wouldn't be present as a dad. I would just literally be not even, you know, basically approachable. They would, and I feel like that would destroy all. I feel like that destroys a lot of aspects of, you know, people's lives. You know, you're then she's, you know, she might be resentful to me because if I'm having to, if I'm working all the time and maybe I'm making a lot of money, but then what does it matter if I'm not here and I'm not, you know, my son, if I'm putting him in baseball and I can't go see his baseball games, like, what does that matter?
Right. Yeah, that's something that I think, like, obviously I'm kind of into like the Manosphere space as well, but one thing that I kind of picked up on from that, like, obviously there's like the famous Rolo tweet of him saying, if you want to become a high, the fastest way to become a high value man is like get a vasectomy. And that was one that everybody focused on. And like, there was a lot of other good stuff in that list, but I think like, it sounds ridiculous that I'm bringing this up, but this kind of goes to your point where it's like, if you want to have this killer career where you make all this money and just focus on that, you know, I think just about any guy can do that. But it's also the flip side of what are you sacrificing to do that? And, you know,
and for some me, guys can, some guys can manage that like before, you know, it's sort of the new, I guess, Manosphere kind of thing where like, yeah. Oh, you know, you find a woman when you're 30, which I don't endorse that idea either. I think in a perfect world that's never like a conversation that's on the table. Like, you know, you probably get married to your high school sweetheart in school, and then, you know, y'all have, you know, 3 or 4 kids, and, you know, then you go about your life, you know, or more, whatever. But, you know, it kind of would be the cheat code, you know, because I look at guys like PewDiePie, you know, so like, you know, I watched a lot of his stuff. You know, now he has a kid and I think he's got another on the way, but like his whole thing was, okay, grind career. Like, I'm going to make YouTubing a thing. And then he did that for a long, long period of time,
right.
You know, basically like a 10-year career or whatever. And then now he's like, okay, you know, I got married, I'm going to have, you know, have kids. And, you know, but that was after he was already, he'd grinded his way to the top, and then he was like, okay, now I can, you know, take the brakes, you know, put the brakes on for a little bit and coast, you know, down the hill. Now that I've kind of pushed myself, you know, all the way, you know, push the boulder all the way up the hill. And now I can just kind of roll down. But yeah, for a lot of guys, like if that was your trajectory, like that would be the easiest way. But, you know, like I said, it's not really a feasible, and you know, it's there's still going to be other challenges, you know. His wife could have not been able to have children at that point, you know, as old as they were at that point. So yeah, there's all kind of challenges, man, and I feel like a lot of people want to have the perfect formula, and you're just not going to get it. But right. definitely if you choose one specific thing and you're just like, yeah, I'm just gonna money max, like everything else is gonna suffer, like, for sure.
Yeah, and that's a very, very sad reality, is that like something is going to have to suffer in this respect. And I think women are really allergic to accepting this, because I'm sure every single guy has had this conversation with their woman when they came to talk, or you know, when they started talking about kids, like, okay, well, I would like you to stay home. And you know, we could debate whether that's the right thing for absolutely everybody all day. But women, I think, want to accept that, like, I could be the best mom and I can also be the best employee. When it's like, well, if you want to do both, then it's the saying of, if you try to catch two rabbits, you're going to catch neither. Or like, you could still probably be a decent mom, but if you're more present with your kid, then you're going to be a better mom. Like, or at least ideally you would be, but I think the likelihood is higher if you spend more time with your kid, and you know, obviously,
yeah, and I think
all the stuff around that,
like, I guess that's something, you know, like what you're always gonna, yeah, you've got to divide it, and you know, when you divide it, you're going to lose in some aspect, like you have to just own up to that and kind of admit that already. Because definitely, like, with my wife, I would say, like, she's a great mother, you know, good wife, but like, you know, there's stuff like, okay, maybe the house isn't the most perfect pristine condition, you know, not everything is just perfectly clean, you know, like there's some spots like, okay, maybe that could use dusting or something like that. Like, you know, there are going to be things that you prioritize, and you know, I like that she's prioritized being a good mom. That's you know, to me, that's definitely way higher on the rung than having a perfectly clean, you know, amazing looking house or whatever. In those aspects, like I take that, you know, it's going to be okay. Like those things are not that priority and until the house is just absolutely falling apart. And then maybe we have a conversation about that. And you know, like, hey, okay, let's fix this. We can't have dishes all the way up to the ceiling, like a cartoon style. Like that's kind of ridiculous, but
yeah, I'm kind of grateful that, my wife is, so she's off of work right now, and she'll be off work probably till about, after Thanksgiving, because my family gets up. Well, my dad buys a stay at like a resort up north where they pretty much handle all Thanksgiving, so like there's no cooking or anything like that. It's pretty cool. So I'm thinking she'll probably go back to work around after that, because there's gonna be a little bit of a recovery for her, obviously, and you know, just to be with you know, the kid once she's here. But her work schedule for us is just like so good, because she's gonna be working Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then every other Sunday. So it's like, okay, well, you know, my mom's probably going to watch our kid whenever she's at work. So it's like, okay, well, I think that works out pretty damn well, because we don't have to put her in daycare. She's with her grandmother, and my wife only works, you know, 3 12-hour days, and then Monday, Friday, and then the whole weekend, we all pretty much get to spend together. Now, granted, I work, you know, I leave the house about 6:15 in the morning. I typically don't get home until about like 4:30, 5 o'clock every day, but like that schedule right there works out pretty well for us as a family, because now like we all have a lot of time together. We could take long weekends to go do trips. We're already planning our first couple vacations together, and we do have like a very, very solid network of people around us that are going to like make things better for us. And then also, she only works 5 minutes away from our house, so like and then the other thing is, we also set up like a garage gym too, so it's very true that like there is no ideal situation, which is kind of what you were saying earlier, but I think you can get things in like a good enough place. But a saying that I've always been a fan of is you have to leap and you grow wings on the way down, because you really don't have a choice. Like eventually you have to go for it. And that's kind of the way that I think a lot of people kind of look at it when they have kids.
Yeah, you, like, you know, there's no perfect bird has situation. To get out of the nest and before they start actually learning to fly. So, I mean, I guess,
yeah.
That's the idea, but yeah, we're probably not in the, you know, we're in a less advantageous position, but you know, we're making do with what we can, I guess. You know, we don't, you know, luckily, you know, one the oldest is in school. You know, the youngest, you know, he is going to daycare right now, because that's, we just can't, you know,
grandmother. That's your deck of cards.
Yeah. But, you know, and that's where, like, you know, a lot of people are just like, oh, you know, but, you know, all summer she's off, you know, she's a teacher. So it's, you know, all summer she gets off. So it kind of, in some of those aspects, you know, it works out, you know, it's just trade-offs. It's just, you know, you're trading off, you know, but like you said, you know, some people can game it. And especially if you have really good family and a really good network, of people around you, then you can definitely make it work to your advantage. But you know, this wasn't in the cards for us, and you know, that's where I said, like, you know, similar to, like I guess earlier, just going back to that, is, you know, I gotta accept you know, the crappy deck that I was, crappy hand that I was dealt, and you know, make it work. And you know, maybe I've got a you know, I don't have you know, a royal flush here or anything. I've just got, I'm playing with all not even a pair in my hand.
Yeah, but you know, one thing that I was thinking about, and this is probably a really, really good topic to dive in on. Growing up, I don't want to get too personal, but like life was rough. Like, we moved a lot. The house I live in now that I bought in back in 2017, this is the longest I've lived anywhere in my entire life. So I'm like looking at this like, okay, well, my daughter's going to have it like exponentially better than I had it. She's going to have it better than like my wife had it. Cause my wife, you know, a little bit easier. She grew up with her dad and like, you know, there were a bunch of kids in the house, but you know, he's a good dude. So I'm like, okay, well, I know what the struggle from my childhood meant for me. Like, it was rough, but I look back at it now, I'm like, you know, it made me into a hard worker. It made me very, very grateful for everything that I have now, but my daughter will not know that struggle. And how do you teach them that? How do you instill the lessons that I learned without all the suffering? Like, there's going to have to be some, but it's like, what's too much? What's too little? And I think that, to me, seems to be like one of the key battles of being a parent. It's just trying to teach lessons without going too far. And, you know, once again, to bring it to another point that you always brought up, I have failed already. Like, in this respect, I have to fully embrace that there are going to be many moments I just look at myself and think, I completely fucked this up and there's nothing I could do to fix it, but I just have to do a little bit better next time.
Yeah. You know, or, you know, you can definitely pivot in the moment. You know, there's times, you know, I have a temper, you know, and if he's being extra, you know, he's going to get the wrath of that. You know, I got that redhead temper in me. So, he kind of has it too. So we're probably going at each other's throats about it. But you know, I have to course correct myself, and you know, obviously I have to course correct him, because mm-hmm. you can't be acting like this. You can't be misbehaving out in public or whatever it is that I'm having to get on to before. But you know, also I have to pull myself back of like, okay, how far is too far? Like, where's the line? Like, okay, I like, you know, pull myself back and say, I was a little bit too much. You know, I've even apologized to him, you know, like, hey, I was a little bit too hard on you. I didn't mean to. But that was one of those things, you know, in the moment I have to be able to, you know, just shift gears, I guess. It's, you know, you're constantly doing a gear shift of like, okay, I need to go extra hard at him because he's really not listening. Or like, okay, I think he gets it. I just need to kind of let the things play out the way they are. And, you know, if he's going to learn a lesson one way or another. And that's something definitely that I'll struggle at, because I don't know when to kind of let him learn lessons and when to not let him just fall flat on his face. You know, that's one of the biggest things to me. Yeah. Like you said, I don't want him to necessarily fail, but obviously you learn a lot from failure. And that's something that, yeah, I need to, and I think in some ways I've kind of let him do that, especially through playing sports already. Is, like I said, I think he's a good player, but a lot of it was, you know, when he first started trying to catch a ball, I had to teach a kid that couldn't catch a ball to save his life. Didn't even want to reach for the ball. I mean, I'm telling you, like, I had to, like, I threw one and I expected his reflexes just to kick in. Pop him right in the face. Like
oh, damn.
Like, yeah. Obviously, surely he'll just put his hands up. No. That's not how it worked. But, so, you know, then he was defensively putting his hands up. I was like, well, I guess it's a start. But then, kind of had to work through it. But it's, you know, do I just let him fail, or do I try to try so hard to make sure that he doesn't fail? Or do I just put him in the best position that he can be, so that if he does experience failure, he knows why he failed. And I think that's kind of the approach that I've kind of wandered into, just on happenstance of like, okay, I'm going to practice with you every day. You're gonna, you know, I'm gonna throw like 100 pitches to you, and if you're gonna try to hit every single one of them, I'm not gonna make it easy for you, and I'm gonna, you know, I'm out there throwing him, you know, he's not even going up against actual, you know, like kid pitching yet. But I'm like, okay, I'm gonna throw you a curveball, like, and you know, literally throwing him curveballs and, you know, and stuff like this. And it's like, okay, you're gonna hit it, like, and he's like, oh no, don't do that. I said, no, you're gonna hit it. Mm-hmm. And then he does, and it's like, okay, now anything else you should be able to hit off of the coach throwing to you at, like, you know, 25 miles an hour, like, mm-hmm. surely at that point.
Yeah, I know when I try to teach younger kids who are learning to work on cars, the way that I've always tried to do it is I would show them, like, I'm thinking of like a wiring repair, right? Like, okay, well, here's how you have to cut the wire. You strip the wire, you twist it, and then you put the heat shrink tube on, or the solder, or whatever you're going to use. Make sure you put, you know, the other side of the tube on there. If you're doing like a soldering job, here's how you do it. This is what it looks like. All right, now I'm going to watch you do it. And I want you to do this yourself so that way you learn. Like, I feel like parenting is kind of, you hope to raise a fully autonomous person that's responsible and is able to, you, like I said, be autonomous, as in like they can operate in the world as a responsible human being without too much correction. And, you know, I like I said, I'm always trying to just remember to myself, like, I had to learn a lot, I failed a lot. And I'm going to have to realize that, like, that isn't going to stop when I become a parent.
Well, and you know,
and
like,
also my daughter's going to fail as well.
Like you said, it's they're going to be their own person. So whenever you come at them like the same, and that's what I had to figure out, is like, there are, like, if I come at him the same way that I learn things, like, in some ways it works. And so, you know, when I'm teaching him, you know, when I was teaching him how to read, you know, teaching him letters, you know, numbers, like, he's great at math. Like, when I'm teaching him math, great, you know, I teach him in the same style that I learned math, you know, like, okay, here's the, you know, here, do your multiplication tables, do, you know, this kind of stuff, all that stuff, learns it, memorizes it, you know, knows how to do it. You know, I even, you know, explained to him, like, okay, when you're doing multiplication, like, you know, this is, you know, three groups of three is nine, and, you know, stuff like this. And I think he caught the concepts, based on, like, you know, especially also adding in visual sort of stuff with it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, up until, you know, other stuff, he's just not like that. Like I said, with sports, you know, my dad just got out there, started throwing balls, and, you know, I'd be, you know, I'd get my bat, get my stance. I'd watch baseball growing up, and I hadn't really shown him as much because he just hadn't been, well, you know, we didn't want to take, it was rough taking, you know, an infant to a ball game,
yeah.
But, you know, especially in the hot sun, whenever those kind of days, it's like, man, I took him one time, and then I felt so bad. We got back, you know, it was a real hot day. Like I said, you know, he wasn't feeling so hot. And so we kind of left the game early, and then, you know, we took him to the doctor the next day, and he was coughing his head off, and like, oh, he's got strep. Well, like, I had a bad idea, you know. And that's what I tell my wife a lot of times. I'm like, oh, well, this was a bad idea. Like, this is my bad idea. But, you know, you have to, like I said, you have to be able to, you know, understand that. Like I said, they're not going to be a carbon copy of you. That's not what they're designed to be. Like, they are their own person. They're going to have to learn it their own way, and you just kind of have to meet them where they are. You know, like, you know, I had made it a little bit of a game. You know, he liked, especially in sports, like I said, like baseball. You know, I let him, I, you know, tried to get him out, you know, that was his way. Like, okay, can I run the bases now? And cause then I'm trying to run, you know, he hit the ball, you know, 90 feet or 100 feet, and I'm having to run all the way down to chase him down to catch him on the bases. So, like, that was I'm getting a little bit of a double 2-for-1 special there, where, like, you know, he's training his agility, running the bases, and, be trying to catch him. But, like, that was, you know, those kind of things where I had to kind of had to just meet him where he is. Like, okay, we'll do this. Like, I don't like it. I would much rather, like, just do drills with you and teach you how to hit the ball properly.
Yeah.
But if this is what works for you, like, I just have to, you know, go with it.
Yeah, when I was talking to Paul, I think it was yesterday, about this kind of stuff, I remember, because his kids are a little bit older, and we started talking about like the whole drugs conversation, and it's so funny because I'm sure everybody's like kind of has this idea in their mind where like if you clamp down too tightly on your kid, eventually they're going to just, it's going to blow up in your face. And I know that at least like my subjective experience was like my parents were always like, yeah, you can go smoke weed, drink, do whatever you want. And still to this day, zero interest in ever smoking a cigarette, never smoked a cigarette in my life, never smoked weed, zero plans. I hate the smell of marijuana. My wife, same deal. Never smoked weed, never smoked a cigarette. We both drink, and she's not drinking right now, but like sometimes maybe I drink a little too much, but it's like, I'll get drunk, but it's not like I'm pounding drinks every single night. I think about this. I'm like, okay, well, how do I approach this with my daughter in a way that isn't encouraging, but also is like, hey, basically like the way I'm thinking is like, I would really like it if you didn't, but I understand there's nothing I could do to stop you if you're in that position and you're going to do it anyways. Like I have no control of that. But
at KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood. Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC. Member SIPC, a registered broker dealer.
I just hope you don't. But that, like, even at that might be, you know, too much pressure where she's gonna be like, oh no, fuck it, I'm gonna go do everything because dad said no.
Yeah. I guess without getting too personal, I guess the my brother's, you know, first kid, my parents kind of found out as a surprise, and they weren't happy about that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's, yeah, but they like I said, they tried to clamp down. Mm. So hard, like you said, and it just really built that resentment more than it actually helped the situation. You know, so it's one of those things where I think there are certain scenarios where definitely you should clamp down, you know, before things happen. Like, obviously, yeah. You know, I would definitely say, like, you know, if your kid, like, if your kid was like, you know, there's a meth problem around here. You know, a lot of people, we got meth billies for a lot of them. But so, I mean, if my kid is,
I think,
like,
of more of those areas, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, if my 15-year-old is like, you know, coked up on meth or whatever, am I really going to sit there and say, you know, no, like he has to make his own choice.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, that's, yeah, you know, that's a dangerous thing. But as far as like, you know, okay, are they going to get into, is he going to start chewing tobacco or something like that? Like, I can't tell him not to, and I can't tell him that, like, our grandfather had cancer because of that kind of stuff and all that kind of stuff, but I can't make him do it. I can't make him not do it or,
right,
you know, do whatever. Like you said, you're going to have to just kind of, you know, work with him on it, you know, and say, like, this is, you know, here's what you can do. If you want to keep doing this, that's fine. But you're going to have, you know, the consequences, whether or not, like, you're going to deal with those consequences, and you may not like them. You may be okay with them. You know, if you are okay with, after you get plastered drunk, you know, you're having to, you know, you wake up and you peed yourself, and you know, you're hanging off the toilet. Like, if you're okay with that, then you be my guest, you know, I think that's the way you should probably approach it. Like, explain to them, like, hey, you are going to deal with consequences of what actions you take and what you do. And if you want to do that, I cannot stop you from making those poor decisions, but you are going to have to realize that what those poor decisions are going to lead to.
Right. I guess this also kind of tails onto the conversation of like instilling values into one another. So like my wife and I are, I would say, yeah, I really couldn't think of like any daylight on us when it comes to like our personal values. So like we're both pro-life. So, and she's more like apolitical. Obviously, I consider myself more like conservative, libertarian, right-leaning. Like I said, she's apolitical, more of, you know, I would say defaults right more than anything because just the field that she works in. She's around a lot of police, so that's kind of like just the general vibe there. I always thinking like, okay, well, how do you, like, obviously I would want them to be more of a conservative leaning, but I also have to understand that once again, she's going to be her own person. So it's like, how do you talk about these things? How do you go about dealing with these issues without being overbearing? Because once again, to the point we're just talking about, if you clamp down too much, it's going to backfire. At least it generally seems to. All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break. Hopefully you're enjoying today's podcast. Hopefully it's very entertaining and very enlightening. However, I did just want to inform you guys that I am now writing on Substack. If you look up The Great Megalodon on Substack, you will find my Substack. I don't have any articles published at the time of recording this, which is going to change very, very soon. And maybe if you know, enough people decide to join in the paid section of the Substack for the lowly price of $5 a month, I'll start releasing some of the stuff a little bit early, and all the paid members could see some more articles that the public isn't going to see for a little bit, and perhaps access some video content as well. So please consider going over there and checking that out. No politics, no culture war, nothing, just straight heavy metal stuff, heavy metal news, guitars, stuff like that, stuff that I'm really passionate about. So one more time, just please, if you're feeling generous, go over to Substack and check out The Great Megalodon. Thanks. Now back to the show.
Here's kind of been my approach, and it's funny. it's sort of humorous somehow. Sometimes how I do it too is because, you know, I just talk to him, and I think that's something that a lot of parents don't like doing, is that when you think that you're like yes, your children are incapable of making decisions on their own. There was recently, I forget, it was something blew up, and it was like children are not your property, or something, like some leftist like sharing some kind of thing, like your children are not your property. And I think Aaron McIntyre said something about it, like if your children are not your property, what they're trying to say is they want to, you know, like mind rape them, whatever. Basically, yeah.
they're assuming your kids are their kids.
Yeah, but you know, in some ways, like you are gonna have to, like, a lot of people don't think that they owe their children that they need to talk to them, because they think that they are, you know, under their command. Like, and you know, yes, I want my son to follow directions, and like, hey, go clean up your plate after you ate or whatever. But am I going to make him be like me? No, I can't do that. There's right. No way I'm going to do that. Like, because like I said, he is going to be his own person, but definitely like having conversations, like a lot of things, you know, just talking to him, explaining things to him, that even if he doesn't understand, you know, a lot of parents don't want to have certain conversations at certain points. There's some that I like, I'm, you know, postpone, like, hey, just don't do that. We can't talk about it. Mm-hmm. Just don't do it, you know. I don't want to get there to that point, you know. Especially when they're young, man, it's so funny, because oh gosh, you know, your son says something funny and also like inappropriate at the same time, and you're just having to say like, okay, we can't talk about that right now. You can't be saying that, like, bro. Mm-hmm. Just chill out. When he's like, you know, he goes to the bathroom and he's like, my pee-pee got bigger. It's like, oh no, like, let's not talk about this. Dude, you can't be saying that. But like, you don't say that anymore. Like, we just can't be saying that. So, like, that's one of those things. Like, okay, I'm postponing that conversation. We're definitely gonna have that conversation, dude. Yeah,
just but, not right here.
Not right here. Not right now. Not while we're in the public stalls of the bathroom. Yeah. Let's just chill out. Like, so yeah, you know, it's but still talking to him. Like, hey, you know, I just tell him about things. You know, whenever we're just riding down the road, dude, I'm just talking to him. Like, hey, you know, like, literally having a conversation with him earlier. Like, okay, well, like, why are they having to work on the roads? Well, like, you know, the roads need to be maintained. Why do they need to be maintained? Well, you know, you see those cracks in the road. Well, that, you know, that's the sun and the weather, you know, messing up the asphalt and stuff like that. And just explaining things to him, explaining how the world, like, okay, they have to be out here. They have to do this work. This is their, you know, just explaining all that to him. And, you know, that may not be as serious of a topic of as something else, but just being able to have kind of those conversations, just kind of talk to him. I feel like is a lot better than the alternative of not talking to him. And then, of course, he's never going to want to talk to me if my only reply is like, you know, shut up, you ride, you know, like that.
Yeah, because I said so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's to the whole point of like, like, your kids aren't your property. It's like, okay, well, would we recognize them as like autonomous beings then if they were to, you know, if a kid goes out, drives their parents' car and damages property, or, you know, God forbid, kills somebody, then like, we recognize that that kid is not a fully responsible adult and they shouldn't be treated as such, because once again, no one recognizes a kid, an 8-year-old child, as a fully autonomous human being. If you do, then you get down some really, really weird territory that I don't think anybody would agree, or any reasonable person would agree with, right? Like, where you start talking about, like, they defining their own gender. Like, we recognize that we have some control and autonomy over our kids because they're not fully responsible human beings yet.
Well, I would say, you know, you don't necessarily have the control, but you are the primary decision maker for.
Okay. Yeah. That's probably a better way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. The you are the primary decision maker for their, you know, what they're going to do in their day-to-day life, as opposed to some, you know, are they going to be making those decisions on their own? No. Yeah. Like, we cannot allow them to make those decisions. They're not in a position to do so because they're not they don't have the mental wherewithal. So well, we can't say that about, you know, 25-year-old women though. Like,
yeah, see,
their prefrontal cortex is still not developed.
God. Yeah, I remember I had that one throwaway tweet where I wish I remembered it exactly, but I like the prefrontal cortex conversation just came up, and I like typed something. It was something to the degree of like, oh, she'll bang a whole bunch of dudes and then all of a sudden say she's like settling down at like 30 years old, but, you know, my prefrontal cortex or something like that. And it just, I think it got like 250,000 views or something like that. I'm like, oh, that's pretty funny. Like, I just got a one throwaway tweet. Next thing I know, I'm like, oh yeah, my shit's blown up. Look at that. But like,
it's always the junk tweets.
Oh yeah, it's always the ones. There was like this one graph I saw. It said like the amount of time thinking about the tweet and how viral it goes are like completely opposite. Like they're oppositely correlated. Like, if you really think about it, it's like three people.
Oh, my effort posting. My effort posting does nothing, dude.
Like, oh, dude, yeah. Like,
people hate my effort.
No, I like your effort posting, but I know, like, you and I know share this in common. But like, when I see people bugging out about seed oils, I'm like, oh my God, like I can't have this fucking conversation, because I'll post study after study after study after study. It just like the clearest human outcome data that you can find that says, hey, these things are fine. And you think people would be relieved to find out like, oh, actually this isn't bad for me. Like, I could have this. And I'm not telling, I've never, ever told people you should like mainline seed oils. I'm just like, hey, yeah, if you have like a teaspoon of canola oil, actually, like, the evidence is starting to show that canola oil is actually more heart healthy than olive oil. you're fine if you have some canola oil. Like, it's probably actually good for you. Does that mean that should be the entire fat composition of your diet? Absolutely not. No, no reasonable person would say that. The government actually used to have a guideline where it was like 10-10-10, where like 10% saturated fat, 10% like polyunsaturated fat, and then 10% monounsaturated fat, which are like, that's a pretty good diet makeup. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, you tell people this now and people are like, oh, no, you should be mainlining butter. Zero like fat, saturated fat's great.
No fat. No fat diet.
It drives me nuts. You can't have an objective conversation with people. So like, I almost just have like next this every single time. I'm like, I'm sorry. I know more than you. You haven't read a single study. I bench more than you. I deadlift more than I know. That's not an argument, but just I'm sorry. I'm going out on a limb and saying, trust me, bro. I've read enough research to know you're full of shit.
So yeah, I think a lot of people should adopt that mindset more about the kind of stuff, like just it, on some of those topics. Like, especially you'll especially find that when you come to parenting, dude. That's the number one thing that you're gonna have people telling you. Even what I was talking about, you know, like they're gonna tell you, you know, oh, you know, you're horrible for the you know doing this as a parent. You know, like the peaceful parenting, like oh, you should never yell at your children. Like yeah. Mm. You know, you try calmly telling them 100 times to put their underwear in the waste basket. Like you're not going to be a happy camper. Like you are not going to be like, it would be much more productive for you to just yell at him and tell him you are going to do this right now. And if you don't, you're going to lose everything. You're going to live in a padded cell.
We're sending you to the El Salvadorian prison.
You just have to like full on threaten him like this is your life sentence, you know, like you're done for, dude. But yeah, you know, like I said, you're gonna have all kind of people telling you exactly the perfect thing, perfect parenting, you know, oh, you know, I did this and it just worked, and you know they were perfect after that, and this, you know, this, that, and the third or whatever, or this is the perfect, you know, structure for life, you know, you sending your kids to daycare at all. It's like, well, you know, I only do it 3 days out of the five, you know, so that's like, I mean, even if I did the math, you know, that's 3 days a week for, you know, roughly, you know, maybe 30 weeks out of the year. So that's, you know, 90 days that he's away out of the 365. And even then, it's not that long, you know, like and also he's right down the road. It's not that big of a deal, you know.
The overwhelming experience is that they're still spending time with you guys regardless.
Yeah. I think a lot of people confuse that because they're like, they're trying to hone in on the idea that if they're at home more, then all, you know, the interaction is going to be more natural or whatever it is, or they can have more control. Like you said, control, I guess. I don't think that I need to have necessarily maximum control, but definitely, you know, I go about it in the way of, as far as I'm going to have conversations with him. I'm going to do things with them. I'm going to work with his letters at home, with him, you know, and stuff like that. Like a lot of parents just don't do that kind of stuff. Like if you're doing that, if you're reading to your kid every night and you're teaching them their letters and, you know, on your own, not relying on the school to do that for you and teaching them math and, you know, just even in just your everyday life, like, hey, you know, I did it very early, even with them. Like, you know, I've go in the store, buy something, like, hey, this is how much it costs. That's both teaching them pricing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And like, hey, if I give them this much cash, they're going to give me this much change because we're doing the difference of this. Like just simple stuff like that you wouldn't think is necessarily like the most important thing you've ever done in your life. But it kind of is, because when they're absorbing all that, that's what they're getting, a moment with you and them, and you're teaching them something and they're learning about the world around them. That to me is where I think you win. Not in the,
I homeschooled my kids, so now I had perfect control over their life, and I, you know, puppeteered them into the perfect, you know, human. Like, no, dude, like that's not how this works. It works by, you know, trying to be a good person in front of them as best as you can, and also having conversations with them about these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that really seems to be a lot more, how do I want to say this? Like, that seems to be very realistic to me in the respect of, like, you can teach your kids through displaying the behaviors. It's never going to be like, you should demonstrate, not explicate, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's a very, very good saying in that respect, as in, like, they'll know you by your behavior and they'll hopefully pick up on different ways to act. Now, once again, part of this, in my mind at least, and you can correct me if I'm mistaken, is like accepting that, like, they're still going to act however they want to act, but the best you could do as a parent is at least show them to the best of your ability the way that you would hope they would act, and hope that they act the same.
Yeah, and you know, there's always going to be like exceptions to the rule, I
guess. Yeah,
and I think that you have, the sooner that you talk about that and get that out of the way, because like as soon as my son, like it was always funny, it's my son would be you know, I taught him, like, hey, as soon as he learned how to read, this was the funniest thing that to come out of the conversations that we had in the car when he's riding with me. So he learned to read, you know, and he could see the speed limit is, you know, 25 on our road or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he asked me why I'm going 35. Like, Dad, I can read the speedometer. Like, why are you going 35? It's like, well, son, you know, sometimes you're just going to end up breaking the rules. And I can't have a good explanation for you. Like, I cannot, driving 25 on this road, dude, like, it's not, you know, it's not fun. So, I'm not going to do that at when possible, except for this week, because, I did get pulled over and I got a warning. So
I'm definitely caught it briefly.
Yeah. I gotta cool off now a little bit, you know, lead foot has got to tone down, but you know, that's the thing is they reveal a lot about you. I think that's the biggest thing of being a parent, is they reveal a lot about you, and you have to, you know, be able to know that and also be able to deal with all of the sort of sub questions that they're going to, you know, questions and sub questions that they're going to have, you know. All of those whys that they ask you are very important. Every single one of them are important. When they like, it's gonna get really annoying, I promise you, the why phase. Oh God, why is this? Why is that? Why? Yeah. You're gonna get really tired, but I trust me. I think even though as tired as it's made me, answering a lot of those whys has definitely made them and me better in a lot of aspects. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't think that a lot of people really question their own, the right word would be epistemology, right? They're kind of like the way they came to the way they think. And I feel like when you have somebody that just doesn't understand, I don't want to say anything, but like, they're learning the world as it is. And, you know, the world that we live in today, even from, you know, 20 years ago, I'm guessing you probably got like a few years on me. I'm 30. So you're mid 30s, right?
I'm literally a year older than you.
Okay. I don't know why I assumed a little bit older, but.
Oh man. But like, see, I get told I'm young all the time. Like, I have people like telling me, I'm like, I got in my face. Probably
yeah,
my
no, body, you yeah. Definitely, yeah, you definitely look younger than me, but I just always assumed you were a bit older than me. Okay, so, but I'll be 31 in November.
It's like, you know, I got, I've always been told, you know, I gotta get that old soul.
Yeah. No, I've gotten the same thing a lot as well. So, but like 20 years ago when we were kids, right? I'm sure you probably remember telling your brother, whoever, like, hey, you have to get off the phone because I want to get on the internet. Like, now that's not a thing. And
no, see, we were out in the backyard, and I was putting him on the go-kart and making him go and nearly crash into my dad's truck. So
okay. Yeah, well, my dad, see, always
we didn't really I think we didn't get we didn't have like DSL. Like a lot of people had like the DSL or whatever. A lot of my experience was analog for the most part growing up.
Okay.
I kind of had the, because we didn't just get the internet like that quick. It took a while for us to get it, both because we're in the South and because of just the way where we were located. You know, they don't want to run, they don't want to run lines where they're not going to make a lot of money
for sure,
you
know, yeah,
getting you internet. So
yeah,
you know, we're out in the boonies. It's like,
yeah,
but
I remember.
So a lot of my experience was analog, but yeah, especially as soon as we did get internet and we got, you know, kind of got up to speed, it's like, yeah, you know, maybe it's my turn to download stuff, bro. Like, you can't be using all the downloads.
Oh yeah. My brother and I used to have like the toy plastic lightsabers. My dad always tells the story when my brother and I would start dueling with them and we would just crack each other and they hurt so freaking bad. You would hear crack, ow, and then we'd keep going and just beat the snot out of each other. So I did, it just occurred to me when you mentioned running into your, you know, your old man's truck. But yeah, like to go back to like the whole why thing. It's like,
okay. He got me back. He threw a Power Ranger toy at my face and I took it right to the eye.
Oh man, ouch. Yeah.
It wasn't the regular Power Ranger toy either. It was the big Megazord thing.
Oh, he threw Jesus. The whole
Megazord. Stop me right in the eye. So we were tit for tat. So yeah. I consider us even.
Okay, but yeah, fair enough.
I did try to make him eat dog food after
that. Oh man.
I said it's gravy flavor. it was like the gravy flavored dog food. I was like, it's gravy. You like gravy, don't you? Oh, dude. Brothers are fun. Like,
you know, yeah.
That's why it's funny to see them too, because you know I have two boys, so it's funny. It's like they're kind of like we were. It's like but also it's like, you know, I want them to I want them to be close. You know? Well,
yeah, I remember my dad telling me, both me and my brother, that you know, there's gonna come a day where like you two are gonna be the only two that you each other have, and like my brother and I are very close now, and he's a year and a half older than me, and if you looked at us two, you would never be able to tell. I look way older than him, but we fought a lot when we were younger, but I mean, I just think it's like the natural brother thing is just like you beat the snot out of each other, and then eventually there comes a time where it's like, yeah, like, this is my person. And like, yeah, we may talk shit to each other over here and there, but like, we do have each other's sincere best interests out. You know, we look out for each other's best interests. But, you know, that's another thing, because my wife and I keep saying, like, we wanted a boy, got a girl, which is perfectly fine. And like, looking back at it, my grandfather's first kid was a girl, my dad's first kid was a girl, and now my first kid is a girl. More than likely, if it's
from you.
Yeah. So if it's, if like, they're any indication, then the next one's going to be a boy. And like, man, it's very odd for me to think like, okay, well, now I have a boy and a girl, and like, how does this relationship work? Like, I know how two boys work, because obviously like they're going to beat the snot out of each other, yeah, and eventually everything will be okay. But
how does a brother and sister relationship look like? Especially if you've never lived it.
Right. Because like, so my dad has five kids, right? I'm the middle child. I have an older brother, older sister, younger brother. I've predominantly always lived with my older brother. The younger siblings, like, it's not like we're not really close. Like I see them pretty much at dinners whenever I go to my dad's, but that's pretty much it. My older sister, that's a whole nother story disaster that, you know, just whatever. But like, to think about like have my own son and daughter, it's like, okay, well, man, how do you like manage that? Because like my son has to understand that I feel he has a duty to look after the best interests of his sister. And then for his older sister, she's going to have to look out for the best interests of him, because she's able to read women a lot better than guys are going to. And just like the whole psychology of that, I'm like, man, maybe we should just focus on the daughter first. But you understand what I'm getting to. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially nowadays, you can't be letting her get that like Instagram, TikTok brain, you know, downloaded. If she downloads that Instagram, TikTok brain, you know, you're cooked. You're done.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you're not getting a phone until, you know, you actually, we're going to get you literally, the only thing you're going to be able to do is call us, like, and we're going to just block everybody else's number in the, on the planet. You're going to be able to call us for what you need, and, like, yeah, that's probably, that's how I would do it if I was raising daughters. Like, no, I mean, even my son, I'm not just going to, I don't think giving them smartphones is going to be, like, anywhere near in the near future, and they're, you know, he's already, you know, my oldest is, he's about to be 8, so like, I'm not gonna, the, you know, his cousin who's 10 had a phone when she was 8, so it's like, yeah, that's not happening, bro. Like, you're not getting a smartphone like that, like, because it's, yeah, there's nothing good can come from that.
Yeah, I think about, people always talk about, like, raising kids with iPads, and
it's not the iPads. That gets up my craw.
Okay, yeah,
it's,
like,
it's not the iPads, like, because you know, even my kids, sometimes I'll let them have the tablet, but, like,
for sure, yeah.
My youngest, like, you know, he's 3. He really got into the Very Hungry Caterpillar book, and then there was, like, an app on there. You know, he could go in there, and, you know, it had a little, you know, few little educational games, and then he also got to, like, play with the caterpillar or whatever. So there was a little bit of, like, yeah, it's just fun, and as long as you don't just, like, hand, like, that's, you know, wake up in the morning and hand them tablet and like, man, not let them do anything else. Like, that's where I think where people, you know, what people actually mean is, like, letting them live on the device, as opposed to just, like, this is a fun enhancer. Like,
yeah,
like a sentence enhancer. This is the fun enhancer. We're you know, you get a free, like, even video games for my oldest. Like, I don't want him to be consumed with video games, because you know, I understand. I, you know, your boy used to pull some all nighters. Definitely in his day.
Oh yeah.
Even when mom didn't know. You know, especially when mom didn't know, because if mom knew, there was the rare exception when my cousins were over and they got me out of it. But, you know, other than that, but yeah, you know, I don't want him to be consumed by it. But, you know, so it's always, you know, a fine line to walk with that kind of stuff of, like, okay. And like I said, there's no perfect strategy. I don't think there's necessarily anybody telling you, like, Just like with working out, with anything, dude. Anybody telling you there's a perfect strategy, you never let your kid have an iPad, they will be the perfect child, whatever. Yeah. They're lying to you. And right. if you say, like, okay, if I always hand them, you know, yeah, they're lying to you. Like, anybody, you know, an absolute solution. Anybody prescribing an absolute solution is always going to be wrong in some way, because it's not going to be applicable to every single person, especially when you're talking about kids and raising different types of kids. You know, like I said, my I can do different things with my oldest that I can do with my youngest. Like, my youngest, he didn't even want to play video games until like recently. He's kind of picked up, like, oh, brother plays some games, and when he's playing games, I kind of want to do that too.
All right, everybody, hopefully you were enjoying today's episode. I just want to take a quick break from the show to remind you of this show's sponsors and the way that you could support me in this whole development that I'm trying to do here. So I do have channel memberships available, which, as you could see here, you get a decent bit of free content. So as I always try to remind people at the very beginning of the show, you could see all of Common Crown's performances that I record, as well as some members-only uncensored podcasts. So these do get released to the public, but they're without ads, unedited, no BS, just all for you. So you can see there's just hours and hours of Common Crown footage that is all yours to consume. I think we put on an awesome show live, and I think our music's pretty good. So please consider, for the lowly price of $2.99 a month, signing up and becoming a member of the In Liberty and Health community. Thank you so much, and back to today's podcast.
But then he gets bored of it, and he wants to do something else. You know, he wants to build blocks. He really likes playing with blocks. That's kind of more his thing, or whatever else. You know, he's into all kind of other stuff too, and he did that naturally. I didn't tell him, like, hey, you know, I did tell him, you know, like, hey, here's your time limit, but, like, he's getting off before, you know, before I even tell him to get off.
Mm-hmm. And my oldest, like I said, I have to make him get off of video games, but you know, it's still, I'm using it as a treat. Like, hey, you were good today. You know, your behavior, you did everything we asked. You got 20 minutes, 30 minutes to play, maybe an hour if you've been really good that day. That's it. And then like not just, you know, I'm not being, you know, a stickler of just saying no games, no nothing. No,
yeah.
But just, yeah, you know, it's not, you're not going to find the perfect, you know, if I just tell them no games and that's it, just, you know, nothing, they'll be better kids. I don't necessarily think that's the case. You know, it's something that he likes. He likes playing video games. The other one, you know, if he doesn't want to play them, he's not pushing that limit because he doesn't like to play video games. So yeah, it's definitely something where there's not absolute solutions for all these problems.
Yeah, I think setting proper guidelines around it, which it sounds like you've done, I just it kind of makes me sad a little bit. Because I realize I was this kid too, and I, once again, now I'm even thinking about it right now. Like, I have to realize that, you know, my kids are probably going to want to do this or going to do it. I remember being around my grandfather and my uncle, just riding in the car with them with my headphones in and just completely ignoring them. And now I look back at this specifically, like with my grandfather, because I realize like all the time I wasted. And I think it's part of growing up that you realize, like, at least for me, I'm like, man, just if I could have one more day with him, I would give anything. And at the time, you could have never told me that back when I was 15 years old.
Yeah, and, dude.
Yeah.
You know what I wouldn't give, like, what I wouldn't give to have a conversation with him today, like my grandma, is, and. You know, sometimes I would have days with him or whatever, and yeah, you know, it's like, I'm like, it's boring. Like, you know, he took me to, he called it his Romeo Club, retired old men eating out. So there, it'd be him and his buddies, like, you know, they're talking, you know, they're talking the stock market, they're talking this, they're talking that, you know, like, oh, politics. You know, he was big. That's probably why I get it. Is, you know, he was big into the politics space or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, he was always talking about like, oh, this, you know, this new proposal, blah blah blah, this, that, third or whatever. And you know, he's ranting and raving to these other guys, chime in like, oh, you know, that sucks, you know, like whatever. But just old guys talking about it. It's like, man, like, what I wouldn't give to just kind of do that now. Even though I thought that was like the stupidest thing ever. But you know, I was still there. I wasn't, like you said, like I didn't just have my, there's, I think there was a viral clip a couple years ago or something that was similar to what you're saying. Like a kid just like plugged in headphones and there's like his, you know, grandfather, and people are like, you know, commenting on it about like, oh, you know, he should just rip his earphones out. And I don't think that was ever the solution. Like, I don't know. There were a lot of people kind of going, you know, extreme on it. You know, like, oh, the kid sucks. Like, you know, make him, you know, rip the earphones out and throw them in the trash can, all the kind of stuff. You know, very stuff that I wouldn't want to do. But I think a lot of it has to do with, like, you have to just being present and then also engaging. You know, I think too, on, you know, some of their part, my grandfather's probably really good on that kind of stuff, because he always wanted to, like, he's always talking to me, he's always wanting to like see, know how I'm doing, what you been up to, like, you know, getting in, you know, like, hey, what's next, kind of what's next for you, almost like in that aspect. He was always in sort of that space. But you know, so that's why I definitely miss him that way. But because it was like, I feel like I could have like some really great conversations. It just didn't pan out that way. But like, if I just imagine me and him sitting down having a chat, like, oh yeah, you know, like, we'd probably have some disagreements, I'm sure, because I would probably be like, be too hard line right for even him in mm-hmm. some aspects. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean,
we could probably say like, hey, you know, like, you know, Ron Paul was great, right? You know, like, mm-hmm. yeah, Ron Paul was great. You know,
yeah,
he like.
You know, I was talking to somebody today, and I think you probably follow him, Jeff Accordion on Twitter. He's a really, really good guy. And we have like disagreements, little scraps and stuff like that, but he's a very, very good person. And I remember he said something to the degree of like communists and libertarians sound the same quite a bit. And I had this revelation a few years back when like Pete Quinones and like the post-libertarian moment really kind of happened. I'm like, these people really do have like these very luxury beliefs. And once again, mea culpa, I'm not exempting myself necessarily from this, but like, I think what both these people fail to realize is that like order is a necessary prerequisite for either one of those to even be like thought of. To entertain those as a thought, communism or libertarianism, you need order. And like, to me, this was always like a centerpiece in my mind. And like, when I started meeting more libertarians and getting on the internet and in social media with libertarians, I realized that like, that's not a thought for them. And it's so bizarre to me, because like, to me, it seemed intuitive. I'm like, oh yeah, you have to have like an orderly people who are respectful, diligent, hardworking, willing to defer gratification.
They're operating from, in this, you know, this kind of ties into the parenting thing, I guess, with
sure.
in that aspect. So we can tie, I guess, the political to the parenting, but like the, you know, the, like I said, the idealistic people who think that, you know, your child is just a blank slate. I don't believe in the blank slateism. Like, not even as far as like, I think there's just so much that you have to kind of learn on the fly about them. They have to learn about themselves. Like, they're having to learn about themselves, like, along the way. You know, I don't like this, and that's when you start learning it. Like, they are adopting. And I think, you know, I think it sucks that it comes off as a very, I'll use this example, the movie Inside Out 2, my sons kind of like watching that. I think they mostly, you know, they like the little, you know, the emotions kind of going crazy there or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's unfortunate that that's kind of like it is kind of a more girlish type movie, but there's definitely I feel like there's a good premise there from what they explain of like when these, you know, these kids are growing up and they're developing, they start off with a base set of emotions and feelings and everything, and then they're definitely going to start adopting beliefs about things, you know, even early on. Like, my sons are already probably adopted some beliefs about things, mm-hmm. you know, like, oh, you know, having to do yard work sucks. I'm sure, you know, that's a belief that he has. And he's already kind of constructed that belief. And you know, he's going to change that belief along the way, or he may not. He may just, like, yard work sucks. I hate it forever. But that's where, you know, they're constructing that all the time. And they're kind of having to reformulate. Their brain is kind of working through all this in their own space, and they're having to do it in their own time. You know, you know, some kids are going to have the belief, like, you know, I believe school was easy, you know, elementary, high school, you know, all that very easy. But there's a lot of people who just will always believe that school and education or learning something new is always going to be difficult and always going to be hard. And they have that belief, and they grew up and that was the belief that they developed, and they're never going to change that belief because that's, you know, what they understood and what they've developed into their own person. And you know, that's not something necessarily that you can help, but you can help with the other aspects of just making it an environment where, you know, okay, like I said, with learning and stuff like that, for him, teaching him stuff here and helping him learn here and making things easier for him there at school, you know, like, that's, you know, then he goes to school and he's like, he's almost bored. Like, but it's in some ways, I think it's good, because, you know, that boredom does spark some creativity. And I think like that's good for him. You know, I do think they need to be bored sometimes. Like they need to have that. And so I think it's, yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. Like you can't just think that people are organically going to create and spontaneously adopt all of your beliefs and adopt everything that, you know, and it's like I said, raising kids, like they're not just going to adopt what I say wholesale. Yeah. They're going to evaluate it. They're going to see if it has utility, if it works for them. Mm-hmm. And if they don't like it, they may discard it. That's a lot of what I've done with what my parents taught me. Some of it was not good, and I'd completely write it off of like, okay, this is okay, boomer kind of moment. It is what it is. But then, you know, there's other stuff like, okay, I see what they're saying. I've had time to kind of sit with that and sit on these, you know, beliefs and deal with the consequences of what I was believing and learning about it. And then eventually coming to the conclusion that, yeah, this is, they were right about that. Or just seeing the different perspective, you know, like, okay, I see why dad was the way he was sometimes. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, not excusing it, not saying that it's right or wrong. Like, you know, I understand why dad was how he was, you know, sometimes, you know, I'll give you a good example. You know, I never understood, you know, my dad was the, you know, there's the meme. I don't know if you've seen it, but like the, you know, dad holding the flashlight for your dad, you know, just.
Oh, yeah. Only,
yeah, yeah. So that was definitely me, you know, like hold the flashlight. You're holding the flashlight wrong for your dad. And, you know, he's yelling at you whenever you're trying to fix the car. I realized that, and I caught myself whenever I had exact similar moment of like, oh, no. I understand why dad was doing that, because he was trying to, he was having to use so much, like, you know, force and dealing with all this and all this physical, you know, if I'm having to, you know, push all my weight on this wrench and having to see this and all this kind of stuff that you're doing both physically and mentally with, you know, repairing the car, like, okay, I need to put that part back. I need to remember where that part was, and I'm having to keep that in my head, and also have a kid sitting here talking to me about like the 500th Minecraft fact of the day. Like, no, I
don't have the mental capacity for that now.
I don't need to be hearing my Minecraft whenever I need to remember that this part is going to go back in this place and this bolt is going to hold that on. Like all of that. Yeah, bro, just get out of here. Like, I can't. No.
Yeah.
I can understand why he was about that, you know, but even then it's like, oh, you know, I just had to take a deep breath and I'm like, man, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be like that with him. So, you know, just having to like, give me a second, like, just step back. Like, just let me figure this out.
Yeah. Yeah, it just reminds me. I popped my dad in the mouth. I felt so bad about this. Big ass pry bar. We're prying down trying to get a stabilizer link in, and it slipped and landed right on his top lip. I'll never forget that as long as I live. I still feel bad about it to this day. And that was about 13 years ago. I can still remember it. I could still see my dad's face. I can remember the car. I can remember every detail about it. So I unfortunately had worse experiences than just holding the flashlight. I had to hold the pry bar and clock them. So, oh man. Yeah. I'm hoping I don't have to have those moments with my daughter. I always tell my wife, I'm like, look, I'm a mechanic. Don't listen to anybody when they talk to you about cars, 'cause I know everything. And don't touch your own car. Like it's that simple.
Oh yeah. See, I've had to like learn some of that on my own, but you know, even then, you know, like I said, my dad actually, you know, he's a tractor mechanic, but
yeah,
I knew that like this is not a vehicle that he's worked on. he's having to like learn what's going wrong with the vehicle, and then he has me sitting there being a pain, you know, being the ultimate pain in the kisser, you know, just annoying him some way, and then I can't even hold the flashlight right. So like that's where like I think it's the tipping point. It's like
all these things. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that to me sounds like it kind of sums up parenthood. It's just like I said, all these things coming down on you at once. So, well, Trey, we've been going for about an hour and a half, man. I really appreciate your time. I had an absolute blast. We'll definitely have to do another one sometime soon. Any final thoughts? And if you want to plug anything, tell people where they can find you, any of that good stuff, feel free to drop it all now.
Yeah, like I think, you know, to leave it off, like I said, is just you're always going to be running your own race. Like if that's what you do and you run your own race at your own pace, and if you're satisfied at the end, you know, of the race with how you performed, that's going to be where you land on that. But y'all can find me, Trey Daniel, pretty much everywhere. I do have a Substack, you know, Trey's Think Tank. I'm working on something, hopefully a little bit longer piece that I've been kind of thinking on, mostly about kind of how people have been going on recently, especially about the technology and advancement, not just like in the advancement, but the way we utilize things. So hopefully that'll come out as a good piece. But I'm trying to take some time on it instead of just throwing out. But yeah, Trey Fee Daniel on Twitter, wherever else, and Trey's Think Tank. Go on Substack, TreyFeeDaniel.substack.com, I think it is. But yeah, Trey's Think Tank, YouTube channel, all that. Go check me out. And I will... hopefully be putting something out eventually. But mostly you're going to find me on Twitter and just talking to people and having conversations. So.
Yeah. Nice, man. Well, like I said, I always enjoy it and I really, really enjoyed this stream. I'll make sure I put all those links below. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. And if you were listening to this ad free and unedited because you're a channel member, thank you so much. And until next time, everybody, have a great night, evening, morning, whenever you're listening, and take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.